Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go.
Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. Today we're going to talk about something that I think is an interesting topic that has to do with working with others. It's collaboration.
Collaboration.
So we usually start with a definition, and I'll hold true to that if you don't mind today.
Go ahead.
Collaboration is defined as the action of working with someone to produce or create something. So there's some interesting things in there. Produce and create. I know this is a Google definition, so I'm sure you can use some leeway and apply it in some other ways. But I kind of like what I said at first, right? It's working with others.
Yeah.
So when you talk about producing or creating something, and again, we can nitpick about it. One of the ways that we collaborate from the beginning, and it just kind of comes inherently to us, is when we play. So when you're a kid and you're hanging, you know, spending time with other children, learning how to get along, learning about social
norms.
Yeah, norms. You play games, you play sports.
What's the phrase parents say when the kids are playing together, the parents are friends, and the kids get into a little spat? What's the phrase that often gets used?
No idea.
Let them work it out.
Oh.
You could just say, let them collaborate.
That's good.
That's what the parents are saying.
That is
right.
Good. Yeah, no doubt.
But real quick, sticking with this, what are the kids producing or creating in that moment?
Novelty.
Nice. Yes.
I think novelty is something that, you know, it's something that we probably will end up doing another Life Lab on play because I think it's so important. But novelty is something that we don't value, I don't think, properly as adults. We have the entertainment industry.
Right. Or edutainment, too, now.
And edutainment, too. Because you can't just have fun.
Oh, no. Learning. Well, you can't just learn. You got to entertain me, clown. Well,
both.
Right.
Right. So, like, fun without production or fun without learning, what is that?
Right.
It's a waste of time, right? No.
But anyway. I agree. I'd also add that the kids, potentially, are building a relationship.
Absolutely.
To themselves and to the people they're playing with.
Man.
And to me, relationships are structures, right? They're tools. They become resources over time that you can turn to and use to achieve other goals.
They are. And they're building a skill set. They're building a social skill set that they will use for the rest of their lives. I know that was one of the decisions that Lauren and I were like, well, you know, what do we do with the kids? You know, and we've always had Marin in a daycare type situation where she's around a handful of other kids. And we've looked at that as a good thing because she gets to learn how to get along, how to work things out, how to collaborate with these other children, you know, in a structured and directed way. As she's gotten older, it's come to my attention, right? So she is 3 now, and she's always been in a setting where it's a handful of kids or less, basically. And I went to a preschool that was more like a, you know, pre-kindergarten where you're around 20 other kids or 30 other kids. I don't know what it is in the age group. And so it's occurred to me, I wonder if she's going to, you know, not get the social abilities to collaborate in larger groups. It'll come. It'll come with life. But I do think it's interesting how these are the types of things that develop, and they take a lifetime to develop those skills, those social skills, that collaboration. But you start doing it from day one.
Absolutely. I mean, we're born. Okay, from the time we leave the chute, the birth canal. Think about the collaboration going on.
There's a team.
Yeah.
There is a team of people.
For the most part. Now, what I will say, a major national news story that has recently occurred within the last 2 weeks is our old babysitter, she had her most recent baby in the car in Old Navy's parking lot, and he helped give birth and pull it out because they couldn't make it to the hospital, and everything was fine, healthy, normal.
That's amazing.
So he collaborated, but outside of that, in the medical setting, you are born into a crazy collaborative system that is just humming.
It is a humming system. You are there. You know, your every need is taken care of. You go before you have the baby, you go tour it. They tell you exactly what the day is going to be like. You know, you this is what the room is going to look like. These are the things that you should want to bring. We are going to have some pre-birthing classes where we will teach you about the process. And
right, pre-collaboration.
Pre-collaboration, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they collaborate from the start all the way to the end. I can even remember Lauren and I, when we had Marin in Colorado, they had a program called Baby's First Ride, where they would install the baby seat and make sure that it was installed correctly and show you how to do it. I mean, talk about collaboration in every step of the way.
And some of this is just ridiculous to me. I laugh at it, but I understand that it's important, right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting from the collaborative perspective. Why? Turn on the news right now. If you're near the news, turn on the news. Go look at internet headlines. And how many are positive? How many are focusing on all of the collaboration going on? Let's be U.S.-centric since we live in the U.S. In the United States right now. So one of the ways I wanted to kick off this episode was to just point out some of the overlooked collaboration or taken-for-granted collaboration that most of us have in our lives. One, we wake up. We have electricity in our house. There is just a crazy amount of people working together to ensure that that is just normal. And just like the sun rising, we'd flip our lights and they come on. The fact that we, for the most part, can disagree in this country without violence. Now, sure, we watch the media and it's all violence everywhere. But 99% of the time, it's not.
99.999. Right. I mean, think about your daily life, right?
Today, I went on site to a client. They are a long-term healthcare facility, a retirement community, and they were having breakfast. The residents were having breakfast. And I just sat back and observed the staff and these residents interacting to create a very high and happy quality of life for these people. And it's just all collaboration, working together. That was interesting to me. But the number one thing in my life that I think about every day, it's one of the questions that I have my accountability coaches ask me every single day, is did you lose your cool while driving? I am amazed at how we collaborate on the road. And yeah, people are dicks every now and then, and road rage occurs and this happens. But for the most part, our roadways are not just riddled with accidents and murders. And like, how?
If I didn't know the system as is, if I had never experienced it, and you said, this is what's going to happen, and we'll put some signs up, and there'll be numbers, and they say how fast you can drive and where you turn and who takes turns, but we'll just know that lights are this and stop signs that, and you'll just take turns and you'll merge and all this stuff. I'd be like, well, you better have, like, a police officer every 100 yards watching this and penalizing people who, you know, and you have aggressive drivers. You have people who cut each other off, but for the most part, the system itself works.
It's self-sustaining.
It is so insane.
It's weird. It's like you're reading my notes, and we have not shared our notes. The rules of the road. So rules are absolutely a part of collaboration.
They are.
Right?
They
so are. That we can talk a bit about rules, guidelines for expected behaviors, or norms, informal and potentially unstated guidelines for normal behaviors and situations.
That's right.
But can't rules and norms both enable us to accomplish things and do things and constrain us at the same time?
They do, and that's exactly what they do.
So that's why I think driving is such a good analogy for me personally, is because I am aggressive. Like, I take it personally if I get passed, which is terrible. You know, like I view driving as chess, as a game, and I got to win it, which is so dumb. Dave knows, like, if I'm in line at a red light and there's a gas station, oh, I'm cutting through, yeah. Getting out of there.
Yeah.
But these rules, you know, I'm not just cutting people off, or I don't flick people off. So how do these norms get enforced? How do we do this with each other on the road when we're in death machines? We're literally in these machines that we could just ram into each other and cause mayhem.
Well, I think it gets instilled at a younger age, how to navigate the social structure, and then it carries on into that. So in, at the very beginning, you have conflicts, right? Like both kids want the same toy. How that happens all the time.
Yep.
And I don't know. It's there. It's all philosophical, and we can argue forever whether the nature of humans, whether we are good or bad at heart.
Right.
But for the most part, we figure out how to make things work. You know what I mean? You can't argue that. And kids in the beginning have their problems. The adults show them how to get along. They either pick it up well or they don't. That's where the term well-adjusted comes, right? Like, do you adjust to the social structure that is, you know, placed upon you? And the better that you are able to operate within it, like what you said, right? Rules both enable us and constrain us.
Right.
So the most well-adjusted people, I would say, can operate within the rules and maximize the enabling part of the rules and minimize the constraining part of the rules. And it is a really tricky game to be able to do that. And you can use any one structure, any one kind of set of rules to talk about this in the micro. But if you think about it in the macro, right, you think about two people who end up doing well, right? One of them is a scam artist, is Bernie Madoff, who operated outside of the rules. So he decided he wanted to be a billionaire, and he came up with a scam and a scheme to do it. And he basically, he broke the rules, right? But he became very successful because of it, because he wasn't constrained, right?
Right.
So he had an unfair advantage. He wasn't constrained. He became very successful. Now, let's look at a different guy who is just as successful. Let's look at Jeff Bezos, right? Well, so far as we know, that guy has operated within the rules, and he's way more successful than Madoff ever was. Madoff ended up getting caught, and the constraints came down hard, and he died in prison, right? He's dead.
I don't think so.
You don't think he's dead yet?
I don't think so.
But I mean, it
he
ruined
could be.
His,
I'm not sure. I'm not
he ruined positive. Many, many people's lives.
Yep.
He ruined his family, and he ruined his own life.
So,
but you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
So, like, being very successful, if you're able to navigate within the rules and still achieve what you want on both a micro level, that sets you up for the macro level to, and you know, take advantage of when rules can be worked in your favor.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the Bezos example.
Yeah.
Because I believe, and other smarter people than I have, I'm sure, written about what sets him apart from almost all other business people on the planet right now.
And we're talking about the leader of Amazon.
Yes, sorry, the CEO and founder of Amazon. Think about collaboration. Who's the key stakeholder he's collaborating with that most other businesses aren't? It's almost like an afterthought nowadays. The customer.
Directly.
Amazon is designed to meet, to learn, meet, and adapt to every single customer need and expectation. That's his system he's built. He's built the most collaborative, customer-centric system of any business I know, and that's why he's putting mom and pop brick and mortar out of business one after the other. And not, I'm not saying that gleefully.
No,
I'm just saying that's
right.
Just a fact,
that's
how
right.
It's occurring. But here's an interesting question I have, because collaboration is part of my consulting business. When I come in to do change management or work with teams, I always ask, you know, how do we work together? What do they say? We're collaborative. Interesting. What's it look like? And they're like, well, what's it sound like? Right? Everyone says I'm collaborative in an organizational setting or even probably in a family setting. Okay, well, tell me, what does collaboration look like and what does it sound like? And so when I ask you, I'm sure, we may have talked about this before, but what do you think of when you hear those questions?
So I think that businesses can operate within silos where everyone has their own specialty and they do their own work. It's sort of like the old factory model,
yep.
Right? And so I put in this widget. That is what I do. I'm really good at putting in this widget. You put in all this other stuff, right? And that is a collaborative system. It's a really great collaborative system. But, you know, I do this widget. That's what I do. It's sort of like individualized, organized collaboration with low chance for conflict, low chance for friction. I think today's business in an office setting is different in that, especially in the smaller businesses, it's a lot less siloed. You may have a specialization, but you are called to operate in many different areas and work with other people in those areas that that is their specialization.
Right.
And take their guidance and their wisdom and their experience and value it and make it, that makes you more efficient as a person. You know, we're both working on starting our own businesses, and it's almost like every time we get into an area of specialization, we have a choice, right? So if I get a legal document, a contract from a potential customer, I have a choice. I can try to read the legalese and make sense of it myself, and it will take a lot longer than it would a professional who looks at those all day, every day. Or I could, you know, pony up some money or work with a friend in exchange for a favor who's in that industry, or come up with some sort of agreement where I collaborate with someone. And in that exchange, the work gets done faster and better because the people who are get to stay with their specialties for the most part.
Right.
So
in that situation, all you're trying to produce is a sound decision.
That's right. A sound decision resulting in a executed contract.
Yep. And eventually profit way down the line as an outcome of those decisions. Well, here's some misnomers I want to point out for everybody out there. Let me tell you some things that collaboration is not synonymous with. Harmony, perfection, agreement, everyone getting along.
I love that.
Right? Here's, if voices aren't being raised and emotions aren't being expressed and the one person at the table isn't kind of getting up and running their hands through their hair, you're probably not collaborating.
No.
In a larger team setting, right?
That's good.
So,
in the same way that those children have conflicts.
Absolutely.
Adults have the conflicts too. It's just that by the time you're an adult, you have enacted some systems, norms, operating procedures, or tricks, or whatever you want to call them.
To pre-play conversations.
To get through it.
But that, think about that. So we do that with kids, the pre-play conversation. Okay, remember on the playground, now if somebody pushes you, here's how you respond.
Right. Or he played with that toy all day yesterday.
But
this is her day.
As we get to be an adult with all of this accumulated knowledge, and as our ego continues to inflate and fill the entire room, and we're surrounded with other people with big egos connected to them, we just assume we all know how to collaborate on these work problems, but yet we're not going through any pre-work collaboration training, things that involve clarifying your roles, what the goals is, what the larger context is, timetables, right? Just project management and communication 101. And so that's a lot of the training I come in, and I just take people back to fundamentals and say, you've got all the pieces here. You're just putting them together wrong because you're taking collaboration and communication for granted. They're not paying attention to it.
And it's amazing how, based on my experience, the longer a team is together, and it could be a sport team, a business team, or whatever team, all of that becomes background. It becomes foundation. And it's no longer has to be discussed or negotiated or whatever. And you become more efficient at the doing in that team. It's like the team gels, so to speak, right?
Absolutely.
And what you specialize in is when there are team shakeups, right? Someone goes out, a new one comes in. Yeah. It has to happen. That's business.
Putting new teams together, one team acquiring another and having to be integrated together.
Right? It just shakes it all up. And all of that stuff that was agreed upon, the pre-play conversations, agreements, everything, they now have to be renegotiated or thrown out and started again. And
I think I don't want to stereotype. A lot of organizations and teams, when they feel that they're collaborating, they're doing what I call isolated tinkering. They'll all be in a room, and they'll say, okay, well, let's all leave this room, go do this, and then email it all to Dave, and he'll tinker it and assemble it all together. Why? Because they don't know how to interact. They don't know how to share resources to build each other up. They view each other just as a job or a coworker and not as a whole human. So they don't know each other's full strengths and repertoire. They don't want to teach each other that stuff for some reason. And so here's what happens. The less you interact, the less trust you have. As soon as you have less trust, you aren't collaborating at all. You'll create the illusion of collaboration when the boss is around. But that's easy to do. So then what occurs? Unmet goals, decreased morale, stress, anxiety, backstabbing, resource hoarding, and eventually system failure.
To truly collaborate, you have to be vulnerable. You have to have a give and take. You have to know when to give versus take. You have to build up rapport with the team, you know, through those past transactions. You have to, I mean, your reputation gets impacted by everything that you do.
You have and to have some thick skin.
Yeah. We use the term social capital, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like there is a social currency that you gain or lose based on your past track record in these negotiations and transactions. You know, someone who is known to be a giver, the time that they come to ask, if they're known as a giver, but they, you know, handle themselves assertively in the correct way, the team will be generally much more willing to say, yeah, man, that guy's a giver. He's asking for this. He's earned that. He's earned
potentially,
you know? potentially.
I like what you're saying, yeah. And I'm sure that does occur, but somebody that deals
well, I'm saying
with,
you have to be competent.
Yeah.
You have to be
okay,
a competent
good,
giver.
Excellent.
Yeah.
But I will say, because now we're starting, and I was going to bring this up. Collaboration is one of the strategies to deal with conflict. It's one of the conflict styles that people adopt. We all have a primary and a secondary style for dealing with disagreement or conflict. So if you're an accommodator, naturally, somebody that gives in all the time, that situation Dave said, obviously that can and does happen. But what I've seen when I'm called in to consult is somebody that breaks out of their accommodating pattern and all of a sudden becomes assertive. The rest of the team goes, what's up his ass? Why is she being a bitch today? Mm. Right? Because they've developed this pattern of everyone can walk all over them. You're going to get whatever you want when you deal with Dave, because I'm using you hypothetically. And then when Dave brings his big boy pants and simply sticks up for himself or defends his idea, people are not used to that. And it creates all these ripples.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
You know, I'll say this. That gives me some personal insight, because that is the way I used to operate when I was much younger, and I've learned...
Grade school, maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd said much younger. Okay. I mean, much, much younger. And I've learned and gotten very good at compensating and preventing that by explaining that I want to collaborate and I want to take everyone's input into the decision, but at the end of the day, the decision is mine when I'm in a leadership position. And so I
you
go
definitely
out
of, don't think when, you're a decisive leader for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And so I go out of my way to do that. And then when there are the times where there's a disagreement and I'm still the one that makes the decision, I'm a big proponent of explaining the thought and everything that went into my decision because I don't like the because I said so type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Some leaders are because I said so leaders. And I don't find that to be effective building social capital in the long term.
Sure.
But anyway.
What I'll say, though, going back to collaboration, is I understand what you're saying because I know you really well. But for the audience, Dave will explain because he wants people to understand the logic behind his decision. But what he also does, and he didn't mention, and I want to say, is he also will ask questions and truly listen and not listen to persuade per se. But you'll listen to understand their point. And
yes.
If you think your point's better, now then clearly that's different. Right? Then you'll yes. be like, well, I think you're wrong for these reasons.
And I'd love to see, like, I'd love that there be a track of this. But to me, it seems that I am listening to people and their logic and reason and accepting it over what my preconceived notion was almost 50% of the time.
Yep.
And then 50% of the time, no, I think my logic and reasoning is better. And then I explain it. You know what I love? I love it when after that process, everyone's in agreement. So it's like it feels like the team made the decision.
You're definitely a consensus-driven person.
I am.
For me, though, going back to talking about conflict, because disagreement is part of collaboration. You got to work together when there's an obstacle, a problem, or something that people just aren't in agreement over. But I view collaboration as combining all of – for those of you that know Thomas Kilman, he has a very famous conflict-style model on two different axes. One rates your assertiveness. One rates your cooperativeness. I think it's a little wrong, though, and outdated. I think collaboration, which he includes as one of the five styles, is actually a combination of the other four styles. If you've seen the movie 12 Angry Men, I think they redid it fairly recently. Mm-hmm. The original's great with Peter Fonda, black and white. That whole movie is collaboration. What that jury does, it goes, they compromise at times. They avoid certain conversations and certain topics at times. They compete and defend and try to persuade each other. They accommodate and give in at times when necessary. And in the end, all of those things are you have to do those things in order to collaborate.
So can you list out, you said there
are here's the five.
Yeah.
And I'll go from what is typically viewed in academic circles, and theoretically you shouldn't avoid conflict or collaboration, right? You shouldn't always accommodate. obviously those are useful at certain times, but if you're only doing those two things, that's bad.
It is.
The next one's compromise, right? Give and take, negotiate, concessions. Very useful. Some people view that as a weakness. I just disagree with that. Next would be competition. Clearly, you're defending your ideas. You can be hyper-competitive in this situation and ram your ideas down others' throats. That's never good. You can just say, I think my idea is the best, and here's why. And then the last is collaboration. And academically, they say, viewing a situation as a problem to be solved and not attacking the other people and working. To me, it's just, doing those other four things is collaboration. But you've got to know when to do them and when to exercise them.
So it's avoid conflict or accommodate. It's
avoid, accommodate, compromise, collaborate, compete.
There you go.
Those are the five. But you've used a word that I have it drawn on my paper huge, and that's system. System. So talk to me a little bit more about what you mean when you're talking about collaboration in terms of a system.
We've been talking about collaboration and what I think of it at the micro level versus the macro level. So at the micro level, you have a classroom, a school, you have a business, you have a
family.
And it gets bigger from there to be a neighborhood, to a city, a state, a country. And then you've got the world. And I'll even take it farther than that. And then I'll say there are systems, there are collaborative systems that are governed not by the laws of humanity, but by the laws of nature,
right?
Like the universe and the way that it works.
Gravity.
And there. And here's the thing. You said something. I love the five things that you talked about there, right?
Conflict styles.
There's competition. There is conflict. Accommodating. The systems that work have those built into them at a natural level, right? Hmm. So you can talk about a country's government, and you can talk about the political process. All of that is built into that. All of those are accommodated for. You can talk about the way any natural ecosystem works, and that is accommodated. That is, all of those things are encompassed in there. Now, it may not be it may not be at the behest of a single intellectual being, but the system itself forces the strong to be able to take sometimes and to be able to give sometimes. You've got symbiotic relationships between organisms that they help each other out, and it makes the both of them stronger in doing so. You've got it's a part of nature, and it's interesting to me. It's like humanity tries to replicate that in our social structure, and we're nowhere near as good at it as nature is, because nature is a brutal, rule-driven master. It's like, nope, you win this time, you lose this time, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yep. But there's no emotion in it.
There's no emotion in it. We have emotions, we have motivations, we have all of these things that
memory.
But I mean, I like the idea. I like doing the thought process. So you've been talking about all of these human. You've been humanizing all of this very well.
Right. Well, thank
and talking.
You.
Well, I mean, this is what you do. This is what you study. But I think it's amazing thinking about it in the macro of how these big systems, the big macro systems that no one individual, no 100 individuals even, no 1,000 individuals even has real control over, and how they just amazingly seem to work. It's like a beehive, right? A beehive just works, and the bees all carry out their own role. It's what they were born to do. I was born to be a worker bee. I was born to take care of the queen. I was born to be the queen. They don't know. It's not like they wake up thinking about that on a daily basis. They just do it.
Yeah, they don't strive to become it. They just are.
Right, and they produce honey, and they support the ecosystem around them. They make flowers grow and everything. But they don't know that that's what they're doing. And to me, if you look at bigger, huge, systems – I'm an optimistic person, right? But it just appears as if the human race, as if the world, we're working towards something greater, and there's always inner conflict and wars and squabbles and the things in nature, right? So you're going to have those conflicts. The lion's going to have to catch an antelope every once in a while. But that being said, sometimes we'll be moving forward, sometimes we'll be moving backward. But the direction, for the most part, seems to be going in the same way. And it's crazy. It's like there's a collective consciousness that we're all a part of, but we're unaware of it.
You just made me think of something interesting going back to your original Google definition. Working together to produce or create. Humans working together with nature to produce or create. Because everything we do is to convince ourselves and separate us from nature as if we're not a part of nature. We're outside of it, right? And that's so funny.
And we keep trying to gain the upper hand, and we get better and better at it all the time. Right. But still, we are governed by those rules, no doubt.
And we tend to not work too symbiotically with nature at this point, in my opinion.
Well,
we try.
Business tries to. But, I mean, think about all the nonprofits. Think about all the people who think, well, I mean, there's recycling cans right by us. I mean, it's not out of our collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So, but you were talking about big systems and one human system that's big, that's bigger than any one 100 or 100 billion people eventually, is the internet.
Yeah.
So the internet is really interesting in terms of collaboration because it unites many people. At the same time, it divides many and causes disagreement. You have instantaneous news. At the same time, you have instantaneous fake news. It creates true freedom for many people in other countries, or somebody able to monetize something online and get financial freedom. At the same time, it causes true imprisonment for other people. Outside, of course, outside of the United States, or people in the United States who get addicted to something online, then they're imprisoned in that online. It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's a tool. It is the thing about the internet that's so great is the same thing. I went to a Bitcoin conference last night, and it's the same thing about this. There is no centralized authority, and you know. People are warring and trying to make that happen. Every country wants to be the centralized authority over their little segment of the internet. But on the internet as a whole, every web server that serves up a web page is its own little node. And they all operate together to form this thing that is the internet. And the value of the internet lies in the participation of every single node. When the internet started, it was a handful of computers that would share certain pieces of information. Not very valuable. But through collaboration, they built all of these web servers that mm-hmm. served up all of this information, and then they figured out they could do other things with it, and it was like this magical living thing, this system outside of ourselves that grew and became.
Humans built an almost perfect collaborative system.
It is. It's a collaborative system.
The internet is collaboration perfection. Not the content that's on the internet or what it might cause or influence people to do, but how the system itself operates, because it can't just go down the whole internet.
Right. Right.
That's interesting.
People try to take down parts of it all the time.
Right.
I mean, you talk about, motivations and schisms and all that, but man, the system as a whole continues moving forward. That's why I see myself as an optimistic person. When you look at a system or a structure like that, you can have major advances and major, problems and fallbacks with it. Bitcoin is like the internet of money in that there is no centralized authority over Bitcoin, and its value also is reliant on other people making transaction in Bitcoin. And there was just a schism a couple days ago where they split Bitcoin into two competing currencies, one called Bitcoin Cash. But the point is, these are like the growing pains that any system goes through. The internet went through tons of growing pains between the time that it started. It started off as DARPANET, which was like a defense information. Back in the 60s, the DOD started DARPANET to connect universities to each other. So that if there was a major nuclear event, information could be shared almost instantaneously across large geographical bounds between these universities and their libraries. And it just took on a life of its own and became what we know now.
So all these people, so the internet was created out of human sense of safety and security tied to military, one of our primal needs, the need for security.
For protection. Yep.
And then it got bigger than what they expected, and now all sorts of other people have collaborated to make the internet what it is today.
Think of all the schisms that we've had along the way. At the beginning, it was like seen as an opportunity. There were only a few portals to get to it, like America Online, and they wanted to give you only their little content. And then they had this one little pinhole that you could go to the greater internet. And then people realize, hey, that's got way more stuff than in this America Online little thing. I want to get out of this. Next thing you know, that died. People just had pure pipes to the internet like we have today. The speed increased.
Well, we could
talk about
carrying
around the internet around in your phone. But there's along the way, there's been warring protocols, and it's like any technology, right? You have VHS versus beta, and you have DVD versus Laserdisc.
Well, now you have net neutrality trying to remove collaboration.
Now you have net neutrality trying to charge for types of data streamed through the internet. And this will never end. I mean, that's what it is. But it still grows, and it still become, you know, it moves forward. And I kind of see that being, the internet is a great example. We could talk about
right,
it because we know
right. We're
going to
have
well.
A whole episode on
yeah.
that.
But one thing that I wanted to say was I wanted to bring back a quote and just talk about it. Let's talk about it to humanity. Humanity itself has grown. The system of humankind that is on the world, we're always fighting and having infights and schisms and whatever, but we've grown. We've become more connected. Like this technology, what is the thing that we've gotten most out of the technology most recently? We've become more connected with each other, and we're better able to empathize with each other and understand what it's like to feel like another person and treat someone else like, because we're able to tell our stories to each other quicker, and we're able to understand somebody's life that's all the way around the world where we never had that before.
But there's always pushback.
Oh, there's pushback.
And that's how Trump got elected.
That's how Trump got. I mean, we're going through the like, it's almost like we're having a negative reaction to it, but it's not going to stop going this one direction, right? Which
so,
is growth.
So do you see the human race becoming more or less collaborative?
More, because we're becoming more connected. One of the things that the most recent technology that I've been really excited about, they're trying to erase the limitation of information sharing that we have, that is our mouths moving. Think about that. The fastest way that I can share ideas right now is what we're doing in this podcast. It's moved this muscle in my mouth called a tongue and my jaw together, and it only happens at a certain like rate, right? But if I could share my thoughts and ideas without having to talk, somehow beam them to you, then we could be more collaborative in a shorter amount of period of time, and we could produce more, and we could get more things done. In theory. So I'll tell everyone who's on this right now, go out and Google a woman named Mary Lou Jepsen. Google her TED talk about functional magnetic resonance imaging machines that can literally read your brain and tell what you are thinking. And read what she's working on now. I'll just tell you what it is, but you got to read this because it sounds so science fiction.
But what did I say a long time ago about her technology? And then you said she came out recently and said the same thing.
It can be used in massively negative ways. So basically, they have these, you know, big MRI machines. They can show you images and movies and basically see how your brain reacts to them and build a map of what your brain looks like when you're seeing or thinking about something. And I don't know if it goes person to person, but she did a demonstration where then they do an fMRI, an MRI of your brain while you're thinking of or watching something, and then they can tell, based on the map that they built, what you're thinking of or what you're looking at.
And again, that can help collaboration, but it can sure hurt it too. Yeah, Dave, no problem. God, Dave's a fucking self-centered asshole.
I know. Can you imagine your thoughts constantly being...
I'd be a monster. I'd be in prison. People would have put me in prison years ago.
So we'll see where this goes. But, I mean, when she talks about it in a positive manner, she promotes all the positive things that could come of it, right? So I could think of complex sets of ideas that would, this whole podcast potentially, if I could envision it in a proper way and think about it and send it to you, we could save 40 minutes of talking.
But again, that's where we have a fundamental disagreement.
Sure.
That you think that ideas, once they're ought, are, once they come out of your mouth, are fully formed. Why? Because you are an analytical person that puts it all together before you talk, to be very strategic when you talk. Not everyone is that way. I'm the opposite. I prefer to collaborate and work with someone else to form those ideas out loud. Those are two very different types of collaboration.
You're right. But just because we may not be able to do it in the way that I described, which is fully form it, then beam it out. What if you could just beam out chunks that are just a little bit bigger than what you can do when you're talking and cut the time in half? I mean, just think about the benefit of that. So you're still doing the collaboration that we're right. talking about.
Yeah, no, no.
But at a much faster speed.
I know this is all going to happen someday.
But on the flip side, yeah, she came out and said, I mean, she's like, I want to make this technology. It's going to happen regardless. And so I'd rather be the one who does it and tries to make it, you know, tries to put some sort of controls on it. But she's like, can you imagine what will happen when a police officer can put this hat on you or this helmet on you, and they can ask you if you were involved in a crime, and they can see exactly everything that you're thinking? I mean, it's a scary, scary thought. You know, think of it from a commercial perspective. I always use this example. Think of the day when you walk to a shopping center and they know that you're there for a pair of white men's tennis shoes, and they're like, hi, David, look at all of these white men's tennis shoes. These are at this store, and here are their prices. Oh, by the way, I could tell you're hungry. Here's a Cinnabon over here. You smell that? I know you like that. It's nuts, but the idea there, I love that. Everyone go look at Mary Lou Jepsen, and that is the whole idea behind that technology is to allow us to collaborate better and faster.
It gets back to the point I made about Bezos being customer-centric, so to speak, with products and services and trying to collaborate with the end user, the person who's consuming those products and services. Now, I personally don't like any of that because I want to make my own decisions and have my own control. Even if it's an illusion, I like feeling that. But we need to wrap up.
We'll wrap up, but I'll say this. The collective, I talked about a huge system, this collective consciousness of humanity that seems to be working towards something. And I'll liken it to the bees that are pollinating the flowers and making honey, and they don't even know that they're doing it. For some reason, we have this yearning, this need to be more connected and to be able to share our thoughts, feelings, everything quicker, faster, with more people. And that's what the technology is allowing. That's what the internet allows. So that's happening on one end. The other end is we are also seem to be building towards something that is greater than ourselves. And that leads to that next controversial thing of artificial intelligence, which we'll talk about in coming episodes, which obviously there are things. But we're collaborating together. The reason I wanted to talk about all of this is because there is a quote that I wanted to say that I didn't. And it is that no man is an island. Everyone has heard that, right? Well, that's a quote from John Donne, D-O-N-N-E, who lived 1572 to 1631. And the whole full quote is, "There's no man is an island entire of itself. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind." Mm-hmm. We are a part of something bigger than ourselves, whether or not we want to recognize it or not. And we collaborate every day, whether or not we want to recognize it or not. Zach, you said it before this podcast. You said, "I woke up today knowing we were doing collaboration and paid attention to all the ways that I collaborate mm-hmm. throughout my day." We don't pay attention to that on a daily basis.
No, we take it for granted. And just because there's so much to pay attention to, we only have so much of an attention span. Tied to your quote, though, what is the worst form of punishment outside of like death or
Yeah, like excommunication, right? Like
solitary confinement. Putting a man or woman on an island. Making it so working together to produce, you remove the together and you remove the production. So now the only thing they can do is create a sense of play alone amongst themselves. They can't create another relationship, that resource, that structure.
That's right.
Powerful.
That's right. And you can talk to people who are like, "Oh, I like solitude. I like solidarity. I'm a country person. I don't mm-hmm. like people." But at their core, they need connection. It's just what degree do people need connection?
It's degree versus type.
Right.
Right. I guarantee those people out there have a radio, a TV, something. There's some kind of human connection.
They love their family. They spend time
there's
with
somebody
other
out there that they're connected to.
You like the movie where Tom Hanks gets stranded on an island, Castaway, right?
Castaway.
The whole movie is him just trying not to go crazy because he can't talk to anybody. He has no connection. He's just trying not to go insane. Think about what that says about the human need for connection and collaboration.
Yep. Change challenges. What do we want the people to do this week, Dave?
I would like you to do what Zach did, and I would like you to try to come up with 3 to 5 new ways in which humans collaborate throughout the day that you didn't recognize before. It might be a good idea to carry a notepad around and write them down as you go. And then at the end of the day, reflect on them. And I kind of think it's going to blow your mind all the ways that we collaborate.
Yeah. Mine, the first one I call shift your gaze. So do what Dave said, find at least one way that's taken for granted that you haven't noticed and appreciate it. Think about it. What that does for your life, how it contributes to your life and other people's lives, the quality of life, not just the quantity, how long we live. Second, find a way to work together with somebody that you normally don't work with. And that can be in a family setting, a social setting, or like at work professionally. But do that. Collaborate with someone that you normally don't. And just pay attention. Be in the moment. Pay attention to the avoidance, the compromises, when you get defensive and competitive, when you give in to the other person, because that is how collaboration works.
I like that one. And I'll give an example of where you can collaborate with someone that you normally wouldn't, right? Out in public, doing certain little things like holding the door for someone, or if you see someone with some bags, offering to help them carry the bags to their car.
Or giving the homeless person a dollar.
Or giving a homeless person a dollar. Whatever it is, basically expanding your scope of collaboration in a way that you normally wouldn't do. So, I think that's a very powerful one.
Nice.
Last thought I want to leave everyone else with is think about those who came before you. We all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. There's a really great joke that Joe Rogan does where he talks about how everyone thinks they're so smart because they can use these smartphones and these computers. It's like, if I drop you off in the woods, how long till you send me an email? Think about those who came before us and be grateful for all of the collaboration that has happened till now.
Yes, sir. Well, as always, experiment with life.
Experiment with life.